Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Guidance is internal. Ignition sequence starts. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Permission to board, please.
Permission to come aboard.
Permission to board.
Permission to board.
Do I have some permission to board that sweet mothership?
This is the Permission Granted Podcast. Here's DA.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Tuesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help. They can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. It's a Trash Tuesday, everybody, so send us your trashes on the tweet machine. That's DA on CBS as your handle. Or on the phones, toll free. Hit me up. Who are you trashing? What's aggravating you? What's bugging you? 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. One of the things bugging me, the people that have the gall to say that Patrick Mahomes is made by his weapons. That if Mahomes didn't have these weapons, what would he be? Where would they be? I have to say, if you are aiming your arrow at a guy who in 2 years as a starting quarterback has led his team to back-to-back AFC championship games, won 3 out of his 4 playoff games, has led his team to a Super Bowl, has won an NFL MVP, and has done everything right on and off the football field, you have problems. There's enough people and enough targets across sports these days to not need to blow up Patrick Mahomes. There is a villain born every day in sports. You want to take out your sledgehammer for Tyreek Hill for what he did off the field? I get it. On the field, acting like a dog, taking a leak? I get it. You want to take your sledgehammer to Kyrie Irving, who compared himself to Martin Luther King on MLK Day of all times? I get it. You want to rip somebody who said something idiotic or did something terrible or was a loser or was a loudmouth or gagged or choked or something? I get it. But if out of all of the villains in sports, you have chosen Patrick Mahomes to diminish, you got problems. You're searching. Because all the guy has done is had one of the most impressive first 2 years ever for a starting quarterback and been absolutely impossibly perfect in these 2 postseason games en route to a Super Bowl. That's all he's done is be, perfect. And off of the football field, the same thing. Patrick Mahomes. In 4 playoff games to begin his career, has 11 touchdowns and no interceptions passing and two more rushing touchdowns. He has accounted for 13 touchdowns and no interceptions in his four first playoff games. And you want to make it about his weapons? You want to say, well, I mean, without Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman, without Sammy Watkins and Damian Williams, what would he be? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? I mean, please. Look, every great quarterback needs good pieces to throw to. But nobody ever said, well, I mean, who's Joe Montana? He's got Jerry Rice and John Taylor. He's got Roger Craig and Brent Jones. Come on. Well, who's this Tom Brady guy? He's had Randy Moss and Wes Welker and Rob Gronkowski. Come on. I mean, who is this Johnny Unitas? This Raymond Berry guy? This John Mackey guy? Who is this Terry Bradshaw? This Lynn Swann and John Stallworth and Franco Harris? All, by the way, NFL Hall of Famers. Who's this Roger Staubach with this Drew Pearson and Tony Dorsett? Come on. That's the dumbest critique going into Super Bowl week. The dumbest. Now, I came on the air on Sunday morning for Sunday Morning Football this week, as I do each and every week throughout the football season in year number four. And John Kincaid has preceded me here on these airwaves. He is a phenomenal host in the city of Atlanta, and he also does a Sunday morning show here on CBS Sports Radio. And before I signed on the air, John, in my read, was taking a not-so-veiled shot at Mraz once Jason Garrett was hired as offensive coordinator for the Giants. Mraz jumped to the defense of the hire after years of trashing Jason Garrett on social media.
Know what's a fun thing to do this week? Check social media and watch all the Giants fans trying to convince themselves that the Jason Garrett hire as offensive coordinator is a great one. After years of saying how terrible Jason Garrett is, they're like, well, if there's a big difference between Jason Garrett as a head coach and an offensive coordinator. And I'm like, really? His own owner took the play calling responsibilities away from him because he was terrible at it. With an all-pro offensive line, the best offensive line in the NFL for over three seasons, maybe four. And they had to take the play-calling duties away from Jason Garrett. But Giant fans are convincing themselves, oh, it's a great hire. You're hiring him as an offensive coordinator. It's a great hire. The guy, he just had play-calling duties taken away from him a year ago to try to save his job.
So that was our friend John Kincaid right here on CBS Sports Radio, the John Kincaid Show Sunday mornings, preceding Sunday Morning Football. Now, yesterday we played that audio as part of Soundcheck, and Mraz could not weigh in because he was on his own personal strike. Today he has come off of the strike. He has signed a waiver, come off of the strike. We have agreed to terms here on the DA show. The terms include this. Mraz will do Bilotti's responsibilities for tomorrow's show, since Bilotti picked up his responsibilities yesterday while he was on strike. Also, Mraz has somewhat apologized in a mealy-mouthed fashion earlier in the show for his reasoning behind the strike and the ramifications of the strike itself. Also, should we make and eat Andy Reid's five cheese bacon signature mac and cheese to eat here on the show before the Super Bowl, Mraz must recuse himself from that we shall eat it. He would not be allowed to eat it. And finally, as you know, Mraz once put the hex, the pox, upon Aaron Rodgers because Rodgers once had the gall to say, get away from me, buddy, after Mraz showed him a picture of Mraz in nothing but a Speedo and birdseed in Central Park. And then he put a hex on Rodgers and said Rodgers will never win another playoff game. That obviously ended this year with a playoff win by Rodgers, but Mraz must now make amends by finding either a former Packers player or a Hall of Fame quarterback showing Mraz showing that person the same picture and apologizing for what he did to Aaron Rodgers. In return, I will refer to Mraz at the end of each show this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, as executive producer and sidekick. Did I get it all?
I think we've covered the whole terms of the picket crossing.
And I actually hold in my hand a signed copy of this agreement on CBS Sports Radio letterhead and all signatures needed. Mraz, you finally have the floor to defend yourself to John Kincaid.
Yeah, and look, the Pork Store used to precede the John Kincaid show, so I've listened to John Kincaid plenty on a Sunday morning. Guy's built himself quite the career. All I will say is this. I don't know whether it is working with Shep every weekend, who's dropping in drops that aren't funny, or I don't know if Kincaid is just aging out. But this take of takes about Jason Garrett and his reasoning behind his take is one of the most uneducated football-wise conversations and topics you could possibly have, John. Look, you're an Eagle fan. I get it. You didn't like the Cowboys. You don't like Jason Garrett. And there was plenty to make fun of. You don't like the Giants. The fact of the matter is this. Jason Garrett is no different than Pat Shurmur, Ben McAdoo, Norv Turner, Buddy Ryan, Wade Phillips, and the list goes on and on and on about guys who were fantastic coordinators.
Well, I don't know if Shurmur was ever fantastic coordinator.
Look what he did with Case Keenum. Took him within a game of going to the Super Bowl.
And was McAdoo ever a fantastic coordinator?
Okay, maybe fantastic's a little much. Really good coordinator? Ben McAdoo was a really good offensive coordinator. Eli Manning had his best completion percentages by far under Ben McAdoo. The point is this. Not every guy can handle the responsibility coming from coordinator, really good at it, to being a head coach. Jason Garrett's leash as a head coach was far too long because he was a puppet. But in terms of running an offense, yes, he had his play calling stripped. You know why? Because he, like most of these head coaches or once coordinators, can't handle the responsibility of running the fabric of the team that you need to do as a head coach and call plays.
So proud of our football team.
Garrett was so bad at clock management, so bad on when to challenge and not to challenge. Don't you think that the focus on play calling kind of took a hit because he was so bad at those other things? He didn't have the mind to control and be a head coach. But as far as running an offense, he stepped in as the offensive coordinator in 2007. There are people, and I am not one, that will tell you they believe Tony Romo is a Hall of Famer. Don't you think that that success by Tony Romo, Jason Garrett had a little something to do with? He rode Tony Romo out his whole career except for 2006 and planted there as a former quarterback himself. Dak Prescott, fourth round pick. You don't think Dak Prescott on the verge of a mega contract has anything to do with Jason Garrett? His ability to use running backs, his ability to use tight end, Jason Witten's success. Jason Garrett, so much a part of. He knows how to run an offense. He knows how to get the best out of offensive players. He knows when not having to deal with an owner breathing down his neck or other head coaching nonsense, how to call plays. This is not just a good hire. It is a great hire. It is a slam dunk hire for a rookie head coach in his 30s to get a guy who, albeit a bad head coach, had head coaching experience, but more importantly, is such a good developer of talent on offense. Jason Garrett for Offensive Coordinator of the Year.
Okay. The Clapper. I want to save that. Pete the Body Bilotti, audio director, please mark that down. Because Mraz is saying this is not a good hire. It's a great hire. It's a slam dunk hire and Coordinator of the Year. I want to make sure we have in the rack for the moment that the Giants put up 13 points in consecutive games and Mraz is calling for his head. I just want to make sure that at one point in time, we have the evidence that you said it's a slam dunk hire.
You can have it. This is the guy who is going to take Daniel Jones and make him, at worst, a borderline Hall of Famer.
Because
look, the proof's in the pudding, what he did with Tony Romo and Dak Prescott. And Daniel Jones is not an undrafted rookie. He's not a fourth-round pick. He is a sixth overall pick. So imagine what Garrett could do to harbor that talent.
Okay, here's what Kincaid is pointing out, though, is that if he wasn't hired by the Giants, you would clown this move, and here's why.
I would not. Not as an offensive coordinator, I would not.
You think you can't stand the Patriots. If Josh McDaniels had taken the Browns job and the Patriots hired Jason Garrett, you would laugh. Oh, Jason Garrett's going to save Tom Brady in the offense?
That's not true, and I'm pretty sure if you scrolled my tweets, I said the moment he was fired, Jason Garrett would make an excellent offensive coordinator. He cannot be a head coach. We clowned him for his head coaching decisions, not his offensive coordinator decisions. I said that. I said it before the Giants were even close to hiring him. I said, I don't want this guy anywhere near as a head coach, but if he gets a job somewhere as an offensive coordinator, it's a great hire.
So you really think if the Jets had hired Jason Garrett as OC,
makes a ton of sense.
You would be applauding applauding it and not making fun of the Jets.
Correct. The same way I would applaud anybody for hiring Jim Caldwell as an offensive coordinator, the same way I applauded the Denver Broncos for hiring Pat Shurmur as an offensive coordinator. I think he's a no doubt about it, brainiac offensive coordinator. Now, is he Sean McVay where he's splitting the atom at 30 years old? No, but I'm not necessarily looking for trickery. I'm looking for development of young talent, and I have the proof in the pudding with Jason Garrett is that as an offensive coordinator.
Bilotti, do we believe him? Do you think that if Garrett was hired for the Jets in this same role, that he'd be applauding it, saying great move?
I don't know if he'd be standing up and cheering for it. He'd be trolling it, definitely. That's how he is.
But no, on
that's
that note,
true. You would be making fun of the Jets fan.
First of all, I always do. But that's my point. That's all John Kincaid is doing here. John Kincaid went from having such an unbiased career to his Eagle fandom being biased here, because if Doug Peterson bent over backwards to bring Jason Garrett in, Kincaid would be the first one flapping his gums with Shep dropping in unfunny drops on Sunday morning.
That's two shots at drop.
Because it just doesn't work. That ain't true. If I hear that one more time on the John Kincaid show from Shep, I'm going to lose my mind. I can tell Kincaid's being nice, losing his patience with Shep too. But look, John, either retire or get with the times, because Jason Garrett is a slam dunk offensive coordinator.
I think it's a little rude for you to say he should retire.
Well, when you don't know the difference between an offensive coordinator and a head coach, it's alarming. It's alarming. And that's, to me, what he's showing me here. If he's trolling, that's fine. If he really doesn't grasp why he's a bad head coach, it's alarming to me. And we love John.
It's alarming.
He's taken me out for breakfast and chocolate milk at a very nice establishment before.
And wings.
And
remember,
wings.
We all went out for wings with him.
I said, again, love the man.
But you're calling him to retire.
If that's his thoughts and he doesn't understand why Giant fans...
Don't you think that's a little dramatic?
Well, I mean, of course it's dramatic, but at the same time, look, it's the first time... We're just talking about Felix Hernandez signing a minor league deal with the Braves, ironically, where John is down in Atlanta, right? And he's saying he doesn't have it anymore. Well, I got to be honest with you. When I hear that Kincaid talk and mention that about Garrett, it's kind of Felix Hernandez signing with the Braves on a minor league deal. It's what happened. You were great. Where'd you come up with this take? That, as SDA puts his hand in his head and just shakes.
I can't believe how rude that is.
How is that rude?
You're saying that because John Kincaid has a take that you don't agree with, he's Felix Hernandez, and he's done, and he's cooked, and he's a minor leaguer now. That's ridiculous.
Because it's not a take that nobody can agree with. It's a take that's just nonsensical. He is talking about, we clowned Jason Garrett. We clowned him as a head coach, and he doesn't know that he had his head coaching responsibilities to deal with, and that's why the play calling was stripped.
Yeah, but you can't give Jason Garrett all the credit in the world for Dak Prescott, Tony Romo, the offense, and then also absolve him of responsibility this year when the offense was a disaster. The offense put up good numbers at the end of the season, but you know as well as anybody, Packers, Saints, Patriots, Eagles, Buffalo Bills.
The offense struggled.
All of those games that were important, not only did they struggle, they were terrible. So Jason Garrett doesn't get off the hook for those games.
Yes, but doesn't Kellen Moore get any of the heat for that? All of a sudden, it's Kellen Moore's year and now the offense regresses?
He gets some of it, but what you're doing is you're saying, oh, when Jason Garrett had a great offense, he has to deserve some of the credit.
Because what I believe happened was Garrett knew his time was coming to an end. Now he was in panic mode on focusing on the head coaching responsibilities. And I believe he took too much of his own finger off the offensive pulse. And the offense suffered because of that, because he was so bad in the other areas that he had to make up for it. And that's what made him not a good head coach. But if you're telling him, just focus on the offense. Hey, and when I need you in a meeting, if I have a head coaching question to bounce off, if you're Joe Judge, fine. I think that is going to be the utmost success. And you watch, a year from now, we're going to be talking about, if Daniel Jones isn't playing in the Super Bowl, he'll be a Pro Bowler. And that'll be because of Jason Garrett. You don't look at me like that. It's not like I'm telling you Josh Rosen's going to be.
Well, you just said Daniel Jones is either going to be playing in the Super Bowl or the Pro Bowl.
Well,
I don't think the Giants are going to the Super Bowl next year.
All I'm saying is,
you've now called him a borderline Hall of Famer, and he's playing in the Super Bowl.
I'm not telling you Giants going to the Super Bowl. The point is, I believe he'll be a Pro Bowler, but if he's not a Pro Bowler, it'll be because he's playing in the actual big game. And that's a lot of this Jason Garrett.
Kincaid is going to roast you. And
good,
I can't. I'm here for
good.
All of
it. Let him roast me. And if I hear that ain't true one more time because of Shep, I'm going to lose my mind.
I'd have to think about that. I know we're on air, but I'd really have to analyze that a lot more.
When we come back here on the show, can a new Miami Hurricanes recruit in the transfer portal save the Canes? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
They put the glucose in my blood, Damon. Come on! Those cells are there. You know how hard a battle is? It's uphill all the time.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
25 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for being with us on a fine Trash Tuesday. Hit us up with your trashes. DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. Kincaid has responded to Mraz and his accusation that Kincaid is too old to have a good take. Kincaid responded, go put on your Andy Pettit pajamas. Jonathan tweets, ADA for Trash Tuesday. I want to trash Mraz on his one-day holdout and come back with a Daniel Jones Super Bowl take.
Are those maggots?
Alex tweets, I'm trashing Mraz. He just doesn't get it, never will. His New York teams suck. He'll never learn all the facts. This strike, whatever it is or was, he's striking. It's a joke to his joking legacy. If he wants back on the show, he needs to admit that he's wrong. Hashtag keep Mraz out.
Oh, break out the hazmat suit.
Wow. How about Alex saying that Mraz is compromising his legacy?
Wasn't aware I had one.
You did. It wasn't that flattering, but you had a legacy.
George tweets, can the squealer go back on strike? He makes no sense and is hurting my ears. Hashtag get him out.
Stinky debris.
Ignatius tweets, this is hilarious. Mraz is the biggest homer I've ever seen. Hashtag piggy.
That will contribute to the microplastics in the bottom of the ocean.
I bash my teams all the time. How am I a homer?
Because you have guaranteed the Yankees will win the World Series every year for the last 5 years. You have told us time and time again that the Giants are making the playoffs, becoming a Super Bowl contender. Daniel Jones is a Hall of Famer. On and on and on it goes.
I didn't say they were a Super Bowl contender.
You just said this last segment Daniel Jones could be in the Super Bowl next year.
That'd be the only reason he's not in the Pro Bowl is because they're in the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean I think they're going to be in the Super Bowl.
Doesn't sound like a homer to you at all?
That I think he's going to be a Pro Bowler or a guy who made two quarterbacks worse than him a Pro Bowler?
He has played in 14 games. You said he's already a borderline Hall of Famer.
He can become one because Tony Romo became one, and Dak Prescott looks like one, and both had far less pedigree coming in than Daniel Jones.
Dak Prescott does not look like a borderline Hall of Famer, first of
all. Looks pretty good to me.
He's
for a fourth-round pick.
But he's not a borderline Hall of Famer. He's not a borderline Hall of Famer.
You're absolutely a homer. You know it.
You sat here in a Giants knit helmet after Joe Judge gave a good speech.
Oh, Tom, that's not a homer. That's a passionate fan.
No.
I can't be a homer when I'm constantly crushing my teams, which I do. How many Giant rants do I have where I lose my mind on them? If I'm a homer, everything is pixie land and rainbows.
No, you swing so dramatically back and forth.
Exactly.
One day you'll complain about them, and within 10 minutes you'll convince yourself that they're the next budding dynasty.
You did it with Joe Judge. He went from nobody to Mike Shula, Don Shula,
again,
to one train ride.
That's being passionate and being reasonable.
Well, then what's the line? It's not reasonable to think that Joe Judge is the next Tom Landry.
Time out. I feel like I'm getting overwhelmed and flattered here for a second at the same time. I don't think flattered was the right word. Let me just tell you, a homer never, ever, ever criticizes their team. I always criticize my teams. Therefore, by definition, homer, I am not.
You only criticize them when they fall short of your absurd and unrealistic expectations.
Right, because you're a homer.
No, because I'm a fan that I expect the damn best out of my teams.
Mraz, the day that the Giants hired Joe Judge and didn't hire Mike McCarthy or
Matt Rhule,
you melted down. You said the franchise is a disaster, is a joke. The Maras are lost. They should all be canned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. By the time you were home, you had convinced yourself that Joe Judge was the next Tom Landry. That was your direct quote.
Also true.
Within an
That's
hour.
That's not being a homer. That is being.
What is that?
That is.
That's being sensible?
Well, it's not being sensible either. It's being the opposite of being a homer at the beginning because I'm killing them. And then it's taking the time. You always teach me, Damon, sometimes read, right? So I go, I read. I do my research on Joe Judge, and I come back with, well, this guy could be Tom Landry. I don't think that's being a homer. I think that's being.
You don't think.
That's coming up with knowledge.
Do you think a first-time head coach that has never coached as the head coach in the NFL yet, within 40 minutes of you doing some reading, should become the next Tom Landry?
Well, what was Tom Landry before he became a head coach? He was just Tom Landry. Now he's Tom Landry.
So how about if he becomes the next Jim Tomsula?
Again, possible. However, do you look at Joe Judge and think farting at press conference? I don't.
Do you know what Tom Landry was before he was Tom Landry?
Yeah.
He was the Giants defense coordinator with Vince Lombardi.
Right.
On one of the best football teams of all time.
I've read books. I understand where those guys got hired.
Have you?
Sean Payton and John Fox, same thing. Like Lombardi and Landry, both coordinators for the Giants on a Super Bowl team.
So I think it's a little ridiculous for you to say that you're not a homer. You just turned Joe Judge into Tom Landry within 40 minutes.
Judge! And again, saying he could be Tom Landry.
Well, anybody could be Tom Landry, but you have no basis for saying that. The only basis you have is that you're a Giants homer.
So because I think Jason Garrett and his pedigree shows he's a good offensive mind, that now makes me a homer? Or does it make me somebody who's doesn't want to throw dirt on a guy because he's a bad head coach? I think it makes me a sensible football fan.
You wore a knit Giants hat over your face for 4 hours on Joe Judge was hired. Do you think that that's a sensible fan?
First of all, they sell it. It was 20 degrees out. It's the middle of winter. Am I wearing that in July?
We're indoors.
It's 67 in here right now. It gets frigid.
So 67, you need to cover your face?
Granted, all I'm saying is I would not have worn that in July.
With the ice bowl inside the studio?
It's
and
a combination.
Man of the people.
Cold here, passionate, all of that. I think cold and passion go hand in hand. You give me a Giants face mask, it's cold out, and I'm passionate about the hire. Now I'm look ready to play. It's cool.
Okay, us us allowing Mraz to cross the picket line was the worst decision we've ever had. He was on strike. We could have locked him out for the foreseeable future.
He's even worse now.
He's so much worse. Today is such a bad Mraz day. And let me tell you, all of you listeners out there that said, oh, let Mraz come back. The show didn't sound the same. I stand with Mraz. Blah. This is what you get. This is the bed you made. You wanted it, and now you got it.
And you don't know. You're out there just listening on your radio.
And you have to turn off the radio.
Right, and we can go about your day. You don't have to look at him sitting there not being a homer.
We live 4 hours with him every single day on the air. People get to go in and out every 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's really 5 hours. The half hour before the show that he's here for, and that extra half hour he stays for afterwards.
Well, 10 or 15 minutes.
I was being kind.
The 11:01 train ain't going to catch itself.
All right, I was going to get to De'Ara King. I'll do that coming up here next. Andrew Bogish is in with your headlines. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, DA. These headlines are sponsored by the NFL. Thanks to you, Huddle for 100 surpassed its goal of 100 million minutes. Volunteer in your community and spread the spirit of service. Log your minutes at NFL.com/Huddle for 100. And yes, for those of you playing at home, that was the read that included this holiday season that I have taken out for the sake of our
show.
Nice
job.
You're welcome. The Celtics embarrassed the Lakers as a whole last night, 139-102 in Boston. And Jaylen Brown embarrassed LeBron individually by dunking over
the King.
Brown a little more reserved than Cedric Maxwell postgame.
Just being aggressive and just made a play at the rim. I ain't gonna lie, though, it was pretty nice. It was pretty awesome.
The win snapped the Celtics' 3-game slot. It also ended Kemba Walker's personal losing streak to LeBron. Somehow, Kemba had lost their first 28 meetings.
That's amazing. So the Hornets went 0-for-28 against LeBron over the last, whatever,
seven years. Whatever variation of LeBron jersey he was wearing, he beat Kemba's team 28 consecutive times. Their first 28 meetings, all won by LeBron.
And you wonder
until
why
last night
Kemba left that max contract, the supermax, on the table.
Anthony Davis was back for the Lakers after missing 5 games with a bruised backside, 9 points, 4 boards in 23 minutes. A team record 11 threes led to a team record 61 points for Damian Lillard. His Blazers needed all of it, only beating the Warriors 129-124 in overtime. Second time Lillard made Blazers history after putting 60 on the Nets back in November. The Jazz hammered the Pacers 118-88. The Spurs wasted a 20-point lead before winning in Phoenix 120-118. Denver 107, Minnesota 100, and the Thunder erased a 15-point fourth-quarter hole to win in Houston 112-107. In that loss, James Harden, 29 points, but on 1 of 17 from downtown. Harden went right back on the floor post-game for practice.
Yeah, just get back to the basics. You know, it's like you just, when you're struggling, you try to get back to the fundamentals and the basics of your shot, form shooting, and things like that. Staying with your shot, and just all repetition.
My favorite stat from last night's Rockets game with Harden. Harden missed 16 three-pointers.
That has happened 7 times in NBA history. 7 times has somebody missed 16 threes. Yes?
Are you going to ask me how many times Harden's on that list?
Yeah.
3.
Double it.
He has 6 of the 7?
Yeah. 6 times out of 7 times all time, he has missed 16 three-pointers.
Who's the lone outlier?
I don't know.
His Rockets on a season-long 4-game losing streak. To College Hoops, Baylor, 1-for-1 as number one.
ACOT gives to Bandu, drives in to the baseline left, turns around, comes back out. Now bounces to Gillespie, who'll tear the rim down.
That's John Morris from Learfield IMG College. The Bears' win streak is 15 after holding off Oklahoma 61-57. Number 14, West Virginia laid waste to Texas 97-59. 38 points is the 5th worst loss in Longhorn history, the worst under fifth-year head coach Shaka Smart. The Colorado Rockies now say they're not trading Nolan Arenado, but that is not calming down the third baseman. Arenado telling MLB.com there's been too much disrespect from the front office. Arenado apparently wants more help as he enters year 2 of 8 years and $260 million. Oh. The Astros managerial search continues. Dusty Baker interviewed yesterday. Eduardo Perez today. Former Rangers skipper Jeff Banister likely to get a meeting next week, while our Mets apparently do absolutely nothing about replacing Carlos Beltran.
Right.
And Derek,
do they need one of those guys?
I think they technically do. And somehow they're deciding if guys they already interviewed are actually good enough to get the job now.
Do they? So is there a crunch on time that they need to?
No, I mean, February 14th, 15th would seem to be a really hard out on having a manager.
So they're 3 weeks away from opening up spring training pitchers and catchers.
Yes.
And they're considering for days people they've already interviewed.
Yes. In particular, a guy named Luis Rojas, who is their like roving minor league coordinator. But then they don't know yet, apparently, if he's good enough to manage.
They like going back through LinkedIn and they're like, well, we looked at this resume, but why don't we revisit this again?
Derek Jeter, the only player guaranteed to hear his name tonight when the class of Hall of Famers is revealed. Jeter may follow teammate Mariano Rivera as a unanimous choice. Judging by online tracking, Rockies slugger Larry Walker is a good bet to reach Cooperstown as well. Curt Schilling is trending in the right direction as well. The Niners say running back Tevin Coleman separated his right shoulder in the NFC title game. Head coach Kyle Shanahan fairly optimistic Coleman can face the Chiefs, but the team was still waiting on scan results as of last night. And not surprising here, the Cincinnati Bengals want us to think the number one pick is available. Director of player personnel Duke Tobin told the team website yesterday a weekend report from ESPN was news to him. That report said Cincy would hold on to that number one pick. And checking on day 2 of the Aussie Open, Rafael Nadal, Dominic Thiem, Madison Keys, Simona Halep, and Angelique Kerber all got wins. 19-seeded Donna Vekic sent out wild card Maria Sharapova in straight sets. D.A.?
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, the Bengals thing is interesting. I'm sure we'll delve into this more as the week rolls on or the days up until the draft rolls on, but it kind of feels as though the Bengals did not want anybody to think in Ohio that we're not going to draft Joe Burrow because that would be a huge PR nightmare. And then suddenly somebody in the front office is like, well, wait a second. If we get a package of 4 number 1s, don't we have to do that? And then suddenly they backed off. When we come back here on the show, De'Eric King lands in Miami. Can he turn around the U? And we've got deep analytics on our poll question. What does Rob Lowe know about that weird hat he was wearing, the NFL shield on Sunday? Plus your epic fail, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, so our poll question today on Twitter was, Rob Lowe's NFL shield hat cooler than we think or not as cool as he thinks? 62% of you are questioning his idea of cool. You have said not as cool as he thinks. 61% now as we move in that direction. 61% of you believe that hat not as cool as he thinks. Also, some deep analytics here on the show. Andrew Kaplan has dug into our Facebook page. Did you know our followers on Facebook, 29% of you
are professional or technical occupations. I don't quite know. That feels like a vague definition of what your job is. But also, we have 26% homemakers that follow the DA show on Facebook. And 18% are self-employed.
I'm not on Twitter or Facebook right now.
That's your deep analytics today. Your sabermetrics here on the DA show. Most of you believe that Rob Lowe's NFL hat not as cool as he thinks. It's a Trash Tuesday here on the DA show, so you can send us your trashes. Dominic tweets, I'm trashing Mraz's stunning lack of self-awareness and whiny voice, always sounding like he's about to give himself a heart attack as he plays defense for his bad takes and idiotic comments. Hashtag Homer.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
The Silver Fox tweets, I'm trashing everyone that is trashing Mraz, except for Pete. His reasons are valid. Mraz is making the only argument that a fan can make for the Garrett hire.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
The Miami Hurricanes are getting Derek King. Now, he was a big-time quarterback for the University of Houston. And back early in the season, after four games, he declared that he was going to redshirt the rest of the season to save his final year of eligibility. Most people assumed he would remain in Houston. That was the narrative when he said he was going to sit out. The Dana Holgorsen, just starting out his career at Houston, was going to rebuild for next year. King was going to come back. They were going to have a better chance at going to a bigger bowl game next season after a year of recruits and a year under the belt of Holgorsen. Turns out King is leaving. And there was a big rush on getting him to sign because he accounted for, in 2018, 2 years ago, 50 touchdowns. That's how dynamic he could be. 5-0 in 2018, and he lands in Miami. This is enormous for the Hurricanes. And let's face it, enormous for the ACC. The Hurricanes were so bad this year. And at quarterback, such a mess that in their bowl loss to Louisiana Tech, they played three different quarterbacks and still were absolutely shut down offensively. Shut down. Couldn't move the football, couldn't score any points. An absolute disaster. So to bring in a recruit who already has multiple years of starting quarterback play and experience in Division I and also lands at a place that you know he's going to have decent recruiting talent around him and playing in the ACC versus Houston, this is a big win. And they've only got sophomores or younger at quarterback on the depth chart there. So King must be getting that transfer ready to know that he's the starting quarterback, no ifs, ands, or buts. Can he have the effect of Jalen Hurts or Justin Fields or Baker Mayfield, or the list goes on and on, Kyler Murray, transfers that end up blowing the roof off and having huge seasons? I don't know, because I don't trust Manny Diaz. I don't trust that Miami Hurricanes program. They've been such a mess for so long that just one guy doesn't necessarily change things overnight. But this is huge. And Miami desperately needs a savior. Desperately needs a savior, because it has been so bad for so long. And besides one Cinderella year a couple of years ago when they finally felt like they were back, it's been 10 to 15 years of apathy reigning around that program from a city that used to be ready for national championship runs and instead are just wondering, hey, can you get to 9 wins? That used to be nothing. And now they need to build it back. The ACC desperately needs them to be back, because when it's Clemson and nobody else, it's a scary wasteland of the ACC for college football. Huge win by the Canes to get De'Eric King. Huge win. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. The strike is over. Mraz has crossed his own picket line. Mraz has decided to now rejoin the show. And this was after he signed off on a number of stipulations. But his apology is apology. Left a lot to be desired. It's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
This is a good opportunity then for you to check off number 2 of the stipulations.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry that you guys interpreted this a certain way. And, you know, if you guys felt that somehow you had to pick up any extra slack or anything. I'm very sorry that you guys felt that way. And yeah.
That's the apology.
You got four sorries there.
Excuse me.
Not in good faith.
How is that not in good faith?
Weaseling out of everything. You can't just apologize for going on strike.
I apologize myself for going on strike.
You did everything. You did hard. You did everything right.
I'm sorry that obviously the show suffered without me, and I put the show in that position yesterday. So I'm sorry.
So that was a backhanded diss at us that we didn't do a good enough show without him.
I'm
yesterday.
Sorry that I put the show in a position that it could not be the best Monday of the Championship Sunday show that it could be.
Good burgers.
That I apologize for.
And did you say something under your breath during the apology?
I didn't. I don't know what you're talking about.
I heard that too as it started.
What exactly did you say?
There was something.
I apologize myself for going on strike. I said I'm sorry. I sneezed.
You sneezed.
That I put myself in position on the show. So again, I'm sorry that everything unfolded the way it did.
And which person is that?
Well, that'd be me for standing up for something.
You're the mature adult.
Yes. So I'm happy to be back with you guys. I think, moving forward, we should have a really good, productive morning show. And, now the SAT's back on, and we'll go from there.
Not understanding because you're stupid.
I don't know what else I'd be doing with my life. Clearly, you wouldn't be protesting because I don't know what I'd be standing up for because I can't even hold a sign for more than 3 minutes straight. So I did learn a lot about myself. So again,
it doesn't sound like you did,
no,
though.
You did not at all.
In good faith, I'm apologizing to everybody for putting the show in that situation. So I'm sorry.
But I truly meant no disrespect. Hopefully, I'll have another chance. And be sure I'll make the most out of it.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
I really think this has affected Bilotti negatively. Since the apology, Bilotti has not been himself. He usually is a joyous guy, playing fun music, dancing with me during breaks, coming back from breaks. None of that. I think he really feels burned by Mraz as a really poor teammate and a really bad guy for putting him in a bad predicament. I think Mraz said some things that Bilotti has taken personally about work and covering for each other and lack of work and whatnot, and I think that there is a schism there. Would that be fair, Bilotti?
Very fair.
That even when Mraz came back, he made things worse.
It's not my fault. Are we not allowed to laugh here now? Nobody can laugh? He's got to be all sensitive at me?
You did this, though, with a big middle finger to all of us.
Of course I did, because you guys didn't apologize.
We didn't strike. You went on your own strike. You left the show.
A strike I regretted an hour in, and you wouldn't let me back in. You changed the locks on the door. So that's on you guys. I was ready to do work by 7 a.m. yesterday.
You wanted to come back on the show, and then you flipped the middle finger to us when we let you back on the show.
Again, yes, because I didn't get all of what I needed and wanted. So, of course, there's going to be a middle finger. And now, you rub a little salt on the wounds, and you come back, and you prepare for a Wednesday program.
Ridgely tweets in a picture of his sign that Mraz made yesterday that says, Ridgely sucks. #scab. And Ridgely tweets, I'm going to bring this in 20 years and we'll see if the letters turn yellow.
Ooh, I like that, Ridge. I can call him Ridge now.
Trevor in Bomb City is trashing Cowboys fans who lay claim to the Chiefs as the Dallas Texans. They were the Dallas Texans for 3 years versus 57 and counting in Kansas City. You can pull for the Chiefs, but do not insert yourself into the same level as a Chiefs fan on a claim you didn't even live to see. That's a good one. Is anybody actually claiming in Dallas the Chiefs because they were the Dallas Texans once upon a time? That's pretty obscene.
Houston was locked into the AFC title game for the Titans.
That will do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of the show. Tomorrow, his official thank you changes. Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel. Your director of all things audio. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, on Watch DA, the Wizard of Watch DA. And thanks to Andrew Kaplan, I should say Andrew Bogish, on your headlines. Be good and be good to one another. We'll see if we can rectify things tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnect.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.